Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
A poll out this week finds the majority of New Yorkers approve of the impeachment inquiry conducted by House Democrats against President Trump. That's not unusual in a blue state like New York, but as the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, the Siena College poll finds some broader shifts in voter sentiment regarding impeachment that could be worrisome to the president.
The poll finds that by a 55% to 38% margin, New Yorkers support impeaching and removing President Trump. The data reveals that, depending on their party affiliation, New Yorkers continue to be deeply divided on the issue, says Siena poll spokesman Steve Greenberg.
79% of Democrats support impeachment and removal. 81% of Republicans oppose impeachment and removal. Where do independents fall? Right down the middle. 49% support, 47% oppose.
The poll also found younger voters are more in favor of impeachment than older ones. The survey then dug deeper and asked whether voters believe that Trump has done anything that warrants an impeachment investigation and whether the House of Representatives is justified in conducting the impeachment inquiry. 60% say yes, the president appears to have done something wrong and the House should investigate. Greenberg says the numbers are higher on those questions because slightly more Republicans agree that the inquiry is justified and that the president might have done something wrong. Most who identify with the GOP, however, say they believe the president should not be investigated by Congress. Greenberg says the difference lies in the opinions of independent voters.
Independent voters on those questions side with Democrats by about 15 to 20 points. So thus we see 62% of New Yorkers saying that the House is justified in conducting an impeachment investigation. And when we asked, who do you trust more to tell you the truth, Donald Trump or Nancy Pelosi? Pelosi wins almost 2-1, 57% to 30%.
The poll also asked Democrats about their preference for a presidential candidate and found Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren is now even with former Vice President Joe Biden, with both at 21%. In August, Biden was 5 points ahead of Warren. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders now has 16% of support, and California Senator Kamala Harris and South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg each have 4%. Schenectady native and entrepreneur Andrew Yang has the support of 3% of Democrats, and the rest have the backing of 1% or less of the electorate. And finally, the poll finds that for the first time, a plurality of New Yorkers say they support a new law that allows undocumented immigrants to apply for standard driver's licenses. The law is set to take effect in mid-December, and it would make New York the 13th state to allow the licenses. In previous surveys, the measure was opposed by over half of New Yorkers. Greenberg says that's changing. 48% now support the measure, while 47% remain against it.
It has gone up virtually every time Siena has asked the question. Starting in March of this year, we've now asked it a half dozen times, and each time it has gotten a little bit better in support of this proposal. Now it's virtually break even.
The law faces a court challenge from two upstate county clerks. The immigration rights group, the New York Immigration Coalition, says in a statement that the poll confirms what they've been saying all along. The more people learn about the law, the more they support it. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
Well, you had quite an interview with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, Alan. It has made news all over the world. And that is because during that interview, the governor used the N-word while quoting, actually, a New York Times article on anti-Italian discrimination. You and I both read that article. And the interview led into that because you were talking about this controversy that erupted over a St. Mother Cabrini statue that apparently won in a poll, but Shirlane McCrae, the wife of New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, did not include it on the list for statues.
Hey, David, we're in New York, and above me is a sign that Roselle picked up off the ground when she went to the Columbus Day Parade. It said, Proud Italian Americans for Cuomo. That's right. Andrew Cuomo has felt the sting of discrimination, he says, and he's very, very angry about that. And he was using the N-word in the context, which when combined with the W-O-P term, Italians have been called. David, when I was a young twin and my father heard somebody use that word, he looked at his boys and he said, this is a word you never, ever use, and you never use it under any circumstances whatsoever. And I never do, because there's really no reason anybody would. But the governor did it, and he made a lot of headlines with it. It was something I certainly would not have done. But some people are taking it out of context, and the context was what he was being called and what Italians were being called, and he said it. That's on him. But for people to go around and say that he was somehow using a word in an offensive way, he was not. He was showing the context of what Italian Americans have suffered in this country, and he was certainly not wrong about that.
We should point out that the Speaker of the State Assembly, who's an African American, Carl Heastie, said he was not offended by it.
He did, and he was right, and he knows right from wrong. And in this case, he is defending a governor who needed this defense right now because of the uproar that has happened over this word. But it was used in a context, and that's what you have to remember. And he's getting a lot of support from people you might not imagine giving him support.
Alan, this week, the New York Commission began crafting small donor public campaign financing system, but has yet to tackle the big issues, such as when the program would launch. The system is expected to provide up to $100 million in public financing to candidates for offices, such as governor and the legislature, who get enough small private donations. The commission moved ahead on Monday this week on issues such as the number of small donor contributions that candidates would need to qualify for matching funds. We've talked about this many times. The model is New York City. However, when you had your conversation with the governor this week, the real side issue here is also what many, including the Working Families Party, believe is a move to get rid of something called fusion voting.
Well, that's right. This commission was set up to figure out how we could do in New York State what they've done in New York City, which is to have matching political funds so that other people besides the big boys and girls could run for offices. The guy to keep your eye on, obviously, here is Andrew Cuomo. Cuomo sent in a poison pill. There's no question about it. This commission is going to figure out a way so that you can't run on more than one party. And that is something payback. I asked him about it. Payback by the governor for the Working Families Party having put up a candidate against him in a primary. Candidate who lost, by the way. The governor says, hey, I took their nomination. I ran with them, but it sounds hollow to me. I think he wants to get rid of them. That's not why this commission was set up. The commission was set up so that we could figure out how to do in New York State what they do in New York City and provide matching funds. And then, by the way, we better keep a careful eye on how that's done. It's no secret that a lot of these people, including the governor, get a great deal of money from some of these interests, like the real estate industry and others. So it's tough when you have one under the old system to set up a new system in which Bernie the bartender or others can run against you. Let's keep our eye on the way this is being done.
You also didn't let the interview go without asking him about the kerfuffle involving the issue of the 1199 healthcare union.
Well, the 1199 gave the Democratic Party a lot of money, and soon thereafter, they got one of their objectives met. The governor denied there was any quid pro quo here. Nevertheless, there are a lot of people who think that there was. You put a million or two into the pot, and then all of a sudden, you get what you want. Now, what's interesting here is it's going to cost the state of New York money, because obviously when you're dealing with Medicaid, you know, this is where New York tends to really face going broke, and one of the reasons why it's such an expensive state. That's why this is well worth watching, and we'll see whether or not more comes out on this.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Adirondack Council is warning that Trump administration rollbacks of Clean Air Act regulations threaten a resurgence of acid rain in the region. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
A 1995 federal rule requires the EPA to track emissions from all power plants. Since then, sulfur dioxide emissions have been cut by 90%. But EPA data compiled by the Adirondack Council shows that between 2017 and 2018, sulfur dioxide emissions began to increase. The council also reports that measurements at UAlbany's Whiteface Mountain Atmospheric Sciences Research Center found more acidic clouds at the summit. Adirondack Council Executive Director Willie Janeway says the reemergence of acid rain threats can be traced to Trump administration rollbacks of environmental rules.
We did see some data that scared us that perhaps we were beginning to see a turning of the corner in the wrong direction, combined with hard data on increased emissions from coal plants in the Ohio Valley. So we have gone from being concerned and watching to looking for folks to take aggressive action before it's too late.
Adirondack Wild, Friends of the Forest Preserve managing partner David Gibson says the council's concerns are valid because the Trump administration has not upheld the Clean Air Act.
Due to the acid rain provisions of the Clean Air Act that were passed in 1990. All these years since, sulfates have dropped 90%, nitrogen oxides, and the nitric acid that has fallen through snow, rain, and fog has dropped almost 80%. Then the benefits for the Adirondacks have been remarkable. What many of us fear is that there'd be backward steps taken.
Adirondack Mountain Club Executive Director Neil Woodworth says some, but not all, monitoring stations have found acidic samples. He says acid rain will return if the current federal administration continues to weaken three key areas of the Clean Air Act.
They are scrapping a very important provision of the Clean Air Act called the Good Neighbor Rule, which allows a state that's affected by acid rain to actually go after the sources of pollution. The next thing is they appear to be getting ready to roll back the mercury air toxics rule, and even the industry is against a rollback of the mercury rule. Finally, they are in the process of repealing the Clean Power Plan, which would have not only addressed acid rain, but also started the nation on reducing carbon emissions.
While the ecosystem of the Adirondacks has experienced an 80 to 90% recovery over the past four decades, Janeway is concerned that the Adirondacks remain extremely sensitive to setbacks.
The long-term acid buffering capacity is not what it once was. The Adirondacks are like a patient who has survived treatment for cancer and is still on an underlying basis weaker. So the implications of a sustained small reversal in declines are that we would have a disproportionately large impact.
The Adirondack Council has posted a petition on its website that calls for strengthening federal environmental rules to protect the Adirondacks from acid rain.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
A new report says more than 250,000 New York residents aged 10 to 17 are obese. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation report, State of Childhood Obesity, Helping All Children Grow Up Healthy, finds that the New York State obesity rate stands at 14.4% in young people ages 10 to 17. Caitlin O'Brien, Government Relations Director of the American Heart Association in New York State, finds the survey results disturbing.
This is information found in the National Survey of Children's Health. And what we see is that there's an alarming epidemic of childhood obesity in the state of New York. About 267,000 people, a little bit more than that, 8 kids, essentially, ages 10 through 17, have obesity. And this is really alarming when you think about it, because what we're seeing is kids who are being set up for a lifetime of suffering from chronic diseases. We know that childhood obesity increases your risks of heart disease and stroke, which are the nation's number one and number five causes of mortality nationwide. It also increases your risks of diabetes, certain cancers. So it's really something that we know we have a problem with, and now it's time for the state to take action.
The report raises concerns about disparities in obesity rates related to race and income. Black and Hispanic youth had obesity rates of 22.2% and 19%, respectively, about double that of white youth, 11.8%, with Asian youth less likely to be obese at 7.3%. Executive Director Kevin Jobin-Davis says a Healthy Capital District Initiative survey found local disparities.
38% of black non-Hispanics are obese versus 28% of white non-Hispanics. To a lesser degree, low-income residents of the region are more obese, with about 3% more residents earning below $25,000 a year being obese.
An earlier survey funded by the Johnson Foundation found New York State's obesity problem affects people of all ages. John Auerbach is president and CEO of Trust for America's Health.
What we've learned is that the levels of obesity are highly correlated with the conditions in people's lives. Schools in lower-income neighborhoods are often less likely to have the nutritional options that schools in well-resourced communities have.
O'Brien says there are several ways agencies and governments can help people at the community level improve their overall health.
Improving school wellness policies throughout the state, so supporting the Healthy Hungry Free Kids Act and help school districts implement better and stronger school nutrition policies that include physical education, physical activity, school marketing programs. All of that can really go a long way in teaching kids how to be healthy at a young age and really helping fight off childhood obesity.
Connecticut has the eighth lowest obesity rate for youth ages 10 to 17, Vermont the 13th lowest, and Massachusetts 4th lowest. There are links to the reports at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. In a move last week that surprised the political class from Washington to New York, Hudson Valley Congresswoman Nita Lowey announced she will not seek re-election. The Democrat from the 17th District that includes all of Rockland County and parts of Westchester County has been in Congress since 1989. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn spent some time with Lowy and spoke to her about her decision not to run again.
I must admit, there are mixed emotions in my family. Some of my kids think it's time, and the others say, how can you give up such a great job? And it's difficult for me because I love the work I do. I'm very proud of all I've done. My office, obviously, will remain open for the next 15 months. So I'm going to continue to work every day with the same energy and optimism.
Congresswoman, why now? Why decide now? There were some who were quite surprised by your announcement.
Well, it's always good to have surprises. I just celebrated the Jewish holidays, and it's a time of reflection. And as you know, you think about the past year, you think about your life, what you can do differently. And then I decided I could do this for the next 10 years, but I think it's time for this to be my last term.
Pundits posit that perhaps Lowy wanted to exit on a high note or potentially avoid a primary challenge from the left, like the 2018 primary in which Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez defeated longtime Congressman Joe Crowley. Lowy sticks with her own reason.
What's happening with the president in the White House is so disturbing to me that if anything, I would continue to fight. But I have decided there are other people that are doing the work in the Congress, people I've worked with, people I respect. And for the next 15 months, I'm going to still work hard every single day with the same energy and optimism as always. But I felt it was time.
Lowy appeared with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo in August 2017 to mark the opening of the first span of the Mario M. Cuomo Bridge. Then, as ranking member of the House Appropriations Committee, Lowy was instrumental in securing federal resources critical to moving the replacement project forward. She helped secure a $1.6 billion Transportation Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act loan, the largest in history, to help finance the bridge. Now the 82-year-old is the first woman to chair the powerful House Appropriations Committee.
Well, first of all, with this president in the White House, I'm not even sure that the appropriations bill that we worked so hard on in the House, and we got it finished in June, and the Senate now will continue to work on their part. I'm not even sure if we're going to be able to get this done. But as an appropriator, that bill has so many good things in it that I'm hoping we can get it passed.
Lowy named a number of accomplishments, including food labeling.
People with food allergies and celiac disease are so grateful for the fact that I was able to get legislation passed that has made a real, real difference in people's lives. So that's number one. I don't know if it's number one. I'll just group them. Another is the 0.08, the drunk driving standard. This was essential because no reason. If people want to drink, they can drink. It's not my business. But to drink and drive, so the 0.08 legislation was important. And all my work on basic education, especially for girls around the world, and women's health funding at home, Title X, and international family planning. But I will say, I don't remember if I said it already, the thousands of cases for individuals to get their benefits, to get money they were owed, had vets medals. What an honor it was for me to give medals to veterans who served in the wars. I don't know why it's so hard that the military can't get them. But all this is very important. I'll never forget it.
On her way to Congress, Lowy served in a number of positions in New York state government, including as Assistant Secretary of State under Governor Mario Cuomo. More recently, she tried to help fully restore the state and local tax deduction that was curtailed by federal tax legislation President Trump signed in December 2017. She reintroduced bipartisan legislation in January this year. Some 45% of taxpayers in her 17th district rely on the SALT deduction. In late September, a district court dismissed a lawsuit by New York and other states challenging the salt cap.
I see the impact here in my community, and economic times are worrying people now, and the prices of houses are not what they should be, so the salt deduction is very essential, and we may have to wait for the new president.
Along with the news of Lowy's retirement came speculation about who may run for her seat. There is talk of Clinton Foundation Vice Chair Chelsea Clinton perhaps running for the seat, along with some assembly members. State Senator David Carlucci issued a statement late Thursday saying he is seriously considering applying his experience and passion for public service to fight on behalf of the people of the 17th District. Lowy is staying out of it for now.
I'm sure there'll be many candidates who are thinking about running, who will run, and I don't have an opinion.
Over the summer, Rockland native Mondaire Jones announced what he thought would be a primary challenge to Lowy. He served in the Obama administration in the Office of Legal Policy at the Department of Justice. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1942. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.